Welcome to the Hopeful Activist podcast from the Praxis Centre for Hope and Activism. We are all about exploring our role in God's mission to bring hope and transformation. Hi, I'm Abby Thomas, and welcome to another episode of the Hopeful Activists podcast. Today, you are going to do something a little different and hear from two people who explore with me the crossover of activism and poetry. We will be hearing from Laura Darrell, who started a viral mental health campaign. It sprung from her own experiences of post-traumatic stress disorder and obsessive-compulsive disorder, and she shares her incredible poetry with us. But first, we will hear from Bruce Gulland, who I went to meet for my first in-person interview since You Know What began. It was so long since I'd done an interview in person that I tried to plug the jack from our mini recorder into my ear. Thankfully, Bruce has a studio to hand and the ability to plug things in correctly. Welcome to the Hopeful Activists podcast, Bruce Gulland.
Hi, Abby. Nice to see you.
It's great. Thank you for welcoming me into your studio. I feel like we're doing a bit of role reversal today. You're recording me instead of me recording you.
Yeah, it's all very confusing, isn't it?
So I'm going to read the introduction you've written on your website to you, Bruce.
Yes.
Okay. So it says, "Hi, I'm Bruce. I work as a radio producer and writer and blogger in Bradford with media and healthcare charity Reach Beyond. I like tea, deep thoughts and honing my fearsome Tyrannosaurus Rex impersonation." So you know what I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, indeed. And all those things still stand. So yeah, should we wait till the end for the Tyrannosaurus Rex impression?
No, you got to do it now. Get it done at the beginning.
Okay. Right.
It's very good, and the visuals were excellent as well.
Thank you. I did actually, bizarrely, I've never seen one before. I saw a stand-up comedian do one of those completely different noise, much better than mine. More like the films on Live at the Apollo recently.
Well, you've got a bright future, Bruce.
Yeah. And some competition.
Yes, that's true. So tell me a little bit about you, your creativity and your activism.
Yeah, so I work with Reach Beyond and been here 13 years, done a variety of creative stuff, but it's been in the last 3-4 years that I've done quite a bit of poetry, and I do like writing, particularly about justice and environmental issues. My stuff gets played on one or two BBC local stations, and some shorter ones are used online as well.
Yeah. And do you see it as a form of activism?
I do. It's a kind of it's an age-old question, actually. Can literature or writing change people's minds? And I think it does have art generally can have an indirect role in shaping people's perceptions, worldview, and so it does have an influence. I do like to write about really quite hard hitting things we really need to think about, change our behaviour about, around, you know, food, how we treat refugees and different people. I've been involved in a little bit. I've been on the odd Extinction Rebellion sit down, lie in in Bradford in the past.
Maybe this is a good time to hear one of your poems. You mentioned about Yemen. Could you share with me the poem that I read earlier about Yemen, which is really moving?
Sure, yeah. So it's just a short one. It could apply to one or two situations, but yeah, I was inspired by Yemen. Can the far away become near? What's unclear become clear? Can the abstract become real? Switch think about to feel? Change forget about to hold, move from passive to sold, shift from passing whim, thought, to can, should, and ought, swap apathy too late for a gift to donate, allow what seems abstract to move me to act. So, yeah, I can say just a bit about that.
Do.
I mean, the thing that we seem to find it so hard to identify and connect and act upon, things which are, you know, injustices situations which are far away and which don't impact us personally and directly. Mm. Yeah.
And where's the balance between not putting people off by hectoring them and speaking out against injustice?
Yeah, so it's really challenging, isn't it? You probably find so too. Mm. I believe in trying to capture people's hearts, touch their hearts for situations. I do use humour when I can, occasionally too. If you can find a point of resonance with people when you're talking about something, that helps as well. So obviously sometimes an issue raises its profile in the public consciousness, such as Black Lives Matter, for example, or there's something in the news, or that Yemen one, for example, was sparked by a BBC report from Yemen June last year, which was very heart-rending. And just trying to be artistic as well and create something of beauty, that's something which can attract people into a poem.
Mm. And you mentioned humour. Obviously, a lot of these subjects are not funny in and of themselves. But share with me a poem that you've written that does involve humour to get your message across.
Sure, yeah. So I did one for World Food Day last October. It's every October. It's about tackling the issue of food waste. So yeah, there's some interesting statistics in this one. Of all of the things that are crackers and barmy, that drive me berserk and that mess with my head, are biggies that we could feed a sizable army with the food we could eat that we throw out instead. The more that you learn, the worse that it sounds. It makes me quite sad, I hope you can tell. Each year, every family wastes £700. That's a second-hand car and some chocolate bars as well. 4.5 million tons, 10 billion edible meals. Allow me to show this in terms of a zoo. It's like 3 million rhinos, a shedload of seals, 500,000 African elephants too. And you know what? The thing that makes me most angry, scrap that, hopping mad, close to irate, is that nearly 1 billion folk worldwide go hungry. Even in Blighty, it's 1 out of 8. So now that we know this, why not make a plan to waste far less nosh? And here's a few tips. Make a list and buy only what's needed. You can. Then turn all that leftover veg into dips. Use by means just that. Best before is a guide. Don't forget there's a whole load of stuff you can freeze. Get creative. You'll find that you're turning the tide on the scandal of food waste. Try. It's a breeze. Wouldn't it be fab if the amount we chucked out got gradually whittled down to one big fat zero? Then we'd have something to shout loud about, and you could say, know what? I'm a real food hero.
I love it. It's great. Yes.
Imagining the weight of different animals.
Yes, it's a really good creative response. Thank you so much, Bruce, for sharing your poetry with us.
Thank you, Abby. It's been a pleasure.
And I've put all the links to find more of Bruce's poetry in the show notes, and do follow him on social media for more poetry. Earlier today, I also had the opportunity to speak to poet and performer Laura Darrell about her creative activism. Welcome to the Hopeful Activists podcast, Laura Darrell. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
And we should also say thank you very much to your friend Hannah Barraclough, who put us in touch.
Yeah, Hannah's a brilliant activist in herself. So I'm not surprised.
So we're going to talk about the crossover of poetry and activism today. You are a spoken word artist, would you describe yourself as?
I am, yes. Yeah, among many other hats that I juggle with, but that is definitely one of them.
Yes, and we'll hear a little bit of your story as to how you spend your time as we go along, I think. But you also started a viral mental health campaign in 2015. Could you tell me a little bit about how that campaign got off the ground to start with?
Yeah, absolutely. I ran a mental health campaign called #ItAffectsMe. About 5 years ago, I started to struggle with PTSD and OCD. I'd had a couple of family traumas growing up, and like so many of us do, I put a smile on my face and was sort of managing and going along in life, and probably not taking enough time to look after myself or heal properly from it. And about 5 years ago, it just started spilling out, as these things tend to do, and I became very ill. But after a lot of hard work and getting help from doctors and a therapist, I began to feel more myself again. And I remember sitting on my bed, and for the first time in a good while, I prayed and I said, I asked God to turn what had happened to me into something good. And out of nowhere, this idea appeared in my head, and it felt like a gift, really. And I asked people all over the world to take a selfie with a post-it note on their head that said, hashtag it affects me, to show the universality of mental health. And incredibly, it began to go viral, and 3.5 million people were reached at the time. And there were floods of these selfies all over social media. And I'd never quite experienced anything like it. It became a real movement of hope, and people were connecting with one another. And now the hashtag is sort of a byword, really, for people to be able to talk about mental health. And we started a petition to get mental health popped on the national curriculum, amongst many other brilliant voices in petitions and campaigns. And incredibly, it was placed on the curriculum last year, I think it was.
Absolutely brilliant. And it's a great campaign. And you got some really good media coverage at the time as well, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, I was, it was incredible, really. I was asked to go on the news and Radio One. Yeah, and it was covered in The Guardian and a few other papers, which was just brilliant that the word was getting out there. You know, I remember a woman contacted me out of the blue and said, I saw you on the news, and I was able to say to my husband, you see that girl with a post-it note on her head? Well, that's what I have as well. And it became a catalyst for conversation, I think, which was really, really awesome.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I love, you know, we've had other people talking about their campaigns where these ideas are often quite simple, but sometimes they just, you know, they catch the moment right. And obviously, you know, it feels like it's just a God-given thing at the right moment.
Yeah, I think that's so right. I think there's something about the simplicity of it, but also the timing. I remember it felt like it was on the precipice of something much bigger than what we were doing, because there were quite a few voices beginning to speak out, and the Princes had just started around that time doing a lot of their activism on behalf of mental health. Yeah, it just felt like there was this crescendo of people who started to speak out.
And we're going to talk a little bit about your poetry and your spoken word. Before we do that, just tell me, what's the difference between poetry and spoken word?
Oh, that's a really good question. I suppose there's different forms. So poetry, if you're thinking about paid poetry, then it's written differently, because it's written to be looked at and to be read and processed internally, although I always think poetry should be read aloud. And then I suppose spoken word is written specifically for performance. So quite often it'll deal with much more chewier sounds, or it'll look different on the page because the writer will be focusing on the rhythm more, or the sounds or repetition. But to be honest, spoken word is poetry, and poetry really is spoken word because it can be read out. So I think the two are sort of in conversation with one another.
Mm. So tell me a bit about when you started in this journey of spoken word and poetry and how that began for you.
Yeah, it was incredible, really. Well, a bit like the campaign, it started with a prayer. So after after the campaign began growing, I began to feel God nudging me into something more, but I didn't understand it at the time, and it sort of developed into feeling drawn and called towards ordained ministry. But throughout my life, I'd worked as an actor in the theatres and travelled all around different regional theatres, telling stories and being in plays. And when I felt drawn into ministry and to serving God in the church, I felt pulled in two different directions, really, because of course working in the theatre and the arts is a vocation in itself. And I remember praying and offering to God and saying, how can I intertwine these two, knowing that I would in a way have to say goodbye to working in the theatre, but I knew that God calls us in our entirety, and there would be a way of bringing that creativity into ministry, but I didn't know what that looked like. And so I offered it to God in prayer. And then incredibly, these words started to fall out. I started writing them down, and it turned into a poem, really. And all my poems start, I think, with prayer, but also with stories. My first ever poem that I wrote was about my mum. She couldn't have kids. Her pituitary gland didn't work, which regulates your hormones. And she was on the way back from one of the appointments where the doctors had told her that she wasn't able to have children. And on that way back, a car crashed into her. A man was driving on the wrong side of the road and crashed into her. And she smacked into the window and had to be cut out by the paramedics. But it turns out that that crash started her pituitary gland working, and 9 months later I was born.
Wow.
And this story has always sort of been entwined with my faith, but also my love of story and how important it is. And so this poem started falling out about what had happened. Yeah, so that's how it began, how everything began, really. But yeah, I googled open mic nights, and there was one happening that evening, and so I rather brazenly just rocked up and shared my poem, and it's not stopped since, really.
What a brilliant story. And do you see your poetry as well as a form of activism? Do you feel like you've developed it in that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think it sort of has developed quite naturally without my knowing in that way. When I look back on the poems that I've written, they always have some form of message, or are sort of hoping to put some form of good out into the world through our experiences, through our stories that we carry, and also that hope that somehow out of all darkness will come light and new life. I think actually, because poetry is such a vulnerable thing, when you share your insides on the outside, as it were. And I think vulnerability in itself is activism, because we don't do it often enough, and often our world doesn't allow us the spaces to be vulnerable. But I think when people share what truly is going on for them inside, it always causes change, and always causes good somehow.
And do you think that the arts play a part in good mental health as well?
Oh my goodness, so much. I remember when I was at my lowest, and I think the hardest thing about when you're struggling with mental health is that it feels so linked with destruction, you know, destruction of yourself, of your image of yourself, and it can affect and harm your relationships and how you see yourself and how you see the world. And I think what the arts do so incredibly is they take that source of pain, that source of hurt and destruction, and they turn it into creation, and they turn it into something new, something that can help people express the confusion and the chaos that often feels too hard to put into words. And I think because the arts offer a way of being abstract, a way of thinking outside the box, it can be such an incredible tool for communicating our interior lives, but also through that communication comes healing of sorts somehow. But I think what the arts do incredibly as well is they link you to something bigger than yourself. You know, people are creating things all over the world, all the time. And we are created by the most creative creator. And I think it cannot help but connect you to that and connect you to one another. So, yeah, I do.
And you've been kind enough to say that you will share a couple of your pieces with us. Do you want to tell me about the first one, The Effing Truth?
Yeah, absolutely. So
I said that in the most posh voice I could totally imagine.
You did, I enjoyed it. I loved it. the effing truth. I wrote around the time that Brexit was happening, and it was that sort of snowball of Trump had just been elected, Brexit was happening, and it seemed that the focus in the media was so... nobody knew what truth was anymore, because there was so much propaganda, so much black and white thinking that was being presented to us. And this, I think this poem, I was working with the homeless community in Brighton at the moment, and this poem fell out because of frustrations on the lack of focus on the inequality that is so present in our society.
Brilliant. Thank you very, very much.
They say that freedom starts with truth. Well, it doesn't. It starts with an F. But I think they might be right. An effing blaze of honesty that splices through inconstancy and forces us to try and see the messiness of our humanity. Because let's face it, we are messy, AF, and gloriously so. Because who wants shiny? The griminess of paintwork that goes in to underline the impossible perfection that we struggle to uphold is clinging to our atmosphere and filling it with holes. Not breathing truth is killing us. And not just our planet, but our souls. Or whatever word you want to use for that thing that makes you you. That little fleck inside that makes us dance too hard or cry too much or laugh until we pee. That thing that needs some nourishing with honesty and space to breathe. Antenna lady. We connect through vulnerability, through the broken bits that flake off as we take off all our clothes and sit round naked with our hurts, our fears and doubts as we suppose upon the reason we are here. God knows. But I know the only time I have felt freedom is in truth. The time to say with arms outsplayed that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. That real joy comes from sitting in the mess, allowing it to challenge us and change us, rearrange us and defame us as we struggle to proclaim this to a world that cannot hear, whose fear of imperfection clouds the channels of our news. While men in suits and wigs tweet lies, it is those in need who lose. While politicians press the snooze on everything but Brexit, the neglect that waits in corridors of hospitals is wretched. The youth clubs shut from cuts in funding, utterly defected. So what do? We trust that freedom starts with truth, and we pass it to each other like the parcels on a birthday, unwrapping it with hands that shake and break the patterns passed to us by generations gone, and fight to tell each one of us that we effing all belong, that this planet is for all of us, no matter what our status, that it's that fleck inside that counts and not the bank rolls on our statements, that there is love enough for all of us if we welcome all our neighbours. They say that freedom starts with truth. Well, it doesn't. It starts with an F. But I think they might be right.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
And what about this next poem, which is called Sunny Day? And I did notice in the background, I think you might be by the seaside because I can hear seagulls.
Oh, yeah. They are my daily companion. They are the bane and joy of living down by the sea.
Oh, you're on the south coast.
I am. Apologies if they are squawking in the background. I'm sure they're
not. It's a beautiful reminder of the sunshine and the beach. I'm not at all upset by it. So tell me about this Sunny Day.
Sunny Day is a poem I wrote when I was recovering from OCD. I'd never really understood OCD properly until I experienced it. And I think so often in the media, in our day-to-day lives, people will say, oh, I'm a bit OCD. Or if their friend's a bit tidy, they'll go, oh, they're really OCD. But it's nothing to do with being tidy or quirky. You know, OCD is a response to intrusive thoughts in your head and in your mind that don't come from you. And so people's responses to those thoughts are ways of trying to keep them at bay, which is often presented in behavioral patterns. But the OCD I experienced was one called relationship OCD, which unfortunately gave me intrusive thoughts about my partner, which resulted in the end of our relationship. So this poem sort of came out of heartbreak, but also was a way of healing and of forgiving myself, and but also, you know, accepting that I was unwell, but also trying to change people's perceptions on what OCD is.
And I think as a piece of art, it's very well crafted to give you a hint of the story. Yeah, it really hooks you in. I'm looking forward to hearing it again.
Oh, thank you. So this is A Sunny Day. The day I broke up with you, I broke me. The thing with OCD is that reality is framed by its intrusion, an illusion of the thoughts that scream out certainty but blatantly aren't true. The you it made me see was not the you that bought me Lego to escape, the you that made me plates of rice that just weren't cooked enough. The you it showed me didn't pause at trees to wait on woodpeckers to sound their earthly drills, or stilled my nerves with gentleness the moment that you blessed me with a kiss. See, this is the problem. The OCD you see resides in cleanliness, in tidiness, in order. But that remains a character trait rather than a disorder. The borderline obsession with this quirk of shirking mess was not the desperate illness that enforced me to my bed, the thundering of thoughts that almost stamped myself to death. The you it made me see was not the you who held my chin, the single-handed bike ride made to meet my parents in Brighton. The you it made me see was not the you who read me poo, whose piglet voice and tigger voice all sounded just like Rue. The you it made me see was not the you who wrote me rhymes, whose puns were fundamentally the punniest of all time. The thing with OCD is that it grips you like a fist. It twists up your reality and will not just desist. It made me doubt. It made me shake. It made me miss my lunch. The hug you gave when you held my ribcage and asked me where I'd gone. The thing with OCD is that you don't know who you are. Are you your thoughts? Are you your brain? Are you your fizzing mind? The you that's there is trying to find a way of being heard, to let you know that she's still there, though drowned in the absurd. But when my OCD decided that you were its prey and prized your arms from round me on that sunny London day and slowly took your hands from mine and threw away the gloves, the me inside, she broke inside and hid herself away, surrendered to her illness on that sunny London day. And though there is forgiveness now, it's messy, painful growth of years of help, of work, of tears, of pills to balance both the aching that I felt inside and thoughts that wouldn't go. What doesn't kill you hurts, but man, it flipping makes you grow. The day I broke up with you was the day my life would start. Because somehow, always, no matter what, light breaks out from the dark.
Wow, Laura, thank you so much. It's so generous of you to share those works with us.
No, you're so welcome. It's I just really appreciate being able to share them. So thank you.
You obviously share a lot of yourself in your poems. You've written other poems about for International Women's Day and other works. Where can we find those?
All of my poetry is on at Laura Darrell Writing on Instagram. It's also Laura Darrell Writing on Facebook and at Laura Darrell on Twitter. My dad always says, because my surname is quite tricky to spell sometimes, he says it's Darrell, two A's, two R's, two L's. So if you're wondering how you spell it, you can ask my dad and he'll tell you that.
That is brilliant. Yeah, I'm sure that we will be in touch again and perhaps hear some more of your writing. And thank you so much to everyone for listening today. As always, it's wonderful to have you with us. And if you are doing something creative with your activism, do share it with us on our social media channels or in the Hopeful Activist Lounge, or get in touch with Laura. I'm sure you'd love to hear other people's creativity as well.
Oh, yeah, I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
Brilliant. And next week, I'll have a bit of news to fill you in on about the next step for the podcast. And I'll be introducing you to the rest of the Praxis team, as assuming none of us get isolated, which I have to say is looking a bit dodgy because my husband came out yesterday. My son's gone in today. But hopefully we'll get to Friday without me getting isolated too, because we're going to go away for a day together to the wonderful city of Birmingham. And I will introduce you to everybody on the team and fill you in what's going to happen next. But until then, have a great week.